welcome to another episode of the Rogue Startups Podcast with Craig Hewitt and Dave Rodenbaugh. This is a podcast documenting the journey as self-funded business founders and sharing lessons, tips, and tricks for businesses following the same path as ours. The journey is long and winding, but we're glad you're joining us for it. And now it's time to go rogue with Dave and Craig.
Hello and welcome back to the second part of the 100th episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't listened to the first part yet, go back and listen to the first part of our 100th episode. This is a compendium of startup advice from founders just like you, and I really think there's a little bit of something for everyone. So if you haven't listened yet, go back and listen to it. But if you have, this is part two of our 100th episode.
Yeah, I hope everybody enjoyed part one as much as we enjoyed recording it and putting it together. And we have another 50 or so odd tips here from another group of awesome entrepreneurs, again, recorded largely at MicroConf 2017 back in Vegas in April, but a few that were recorded separately either afterwards or independently. So without further ado, enjoy the remainder of our tidbits here and look forward to talking to you again on episode 101.
Cool. So I'm James Kennedy. I'm CEO at Rubberstamp.io, which is a mostly bootstrapped SaaS product. It's been around for 3 years. So if we're going to talk about biggest impacts on my entrepreneurial career. So I've been, you know, entrepreneur pretty much since my early 20s, but I never actually made much money into my 30s. And the first thing I learned was that it was a great piece of advice from a Texan ex-billionaire called Keith Cunningham. And he had a very similar, simple formula for business. And it was just this. It was just, you have to find out what people want, go and get it, and give it to them. But the key thing is, he said, you have to do it in that order. And definitely for the first, 8 years of my career, I was doing it the other way around. So I was, getting a piece of tech as a geek, you know, I think this is really cool. And then I would run around, I would try to shove it down people's necks, you know, or probably not. I would just, code harder and keep coding, keep adding features. Classic rookie error. So it was only until I gave up the idea of actually coming up with ideas myself, and I listened to people, go listen to people with real problems, then that's when things started to go better for me, right? So the example of that was, you know, my girlfriend at the time, Priscilla, she had more a real problem to solve, which was she needed to hire voiceovers, you know, in her job as a copywriter in an advertising agency. And once I listened to that problem and solved it, that's where we started to get a bit of traction and things went better, you know. The only problem with that is, you know, she was a particularly poor market. You know, she didn't control a lot of money. You know, she would give out 40, 50 grand's worth of voiceover work a year, which isn't bad. But then I was serving a market which was super poor, which was starving artists. It was bad on two levels. A, we ran a marketplace. The good thing about running a marketplace is from the get-go, you need to build very little, right? So you create your tech stack in our case, we would put voices up on our tech stack, you know, and then you need to seed that marketplace with some initial supply and demand, which, you know, Priscilla did she created the demand initially by hiring people from our website. And then I just went and found some supply voiceovers who wanted more work, which wasn't hard to find. And the good thing about that was, you don't have to do a lot of tech work yourself, which was great. The downside is most marketplaces, you know, is a star system. So only about 10% of our customers are really making decent money for being on our website, because we would charge the voiceovers to be on the website. But 100% of them were giving us money, right? So, which means that we had 90% of our customers were either marginal or pissed off at us. And they were poor, and that's what I didn't really like, you know? So that wasn't great. The next thing definitely for me was, you know, going all in. So I tried to half-ass it for a long time. And it wasn't until I had enough pain to motivate me that I started to make progress again. So for me, that pain was, you know, 2008, everyone loses their jobs because of the economy and so on. Priscilla lost her job. I was getting worse and worse at being a Java contractor because I didn't really give a shit about it anymore. So I was starting to get fired from my contracts and, you know, it was going bad. So I ended up working for my brother-in-law in a burrito bar in London. You know, he was starting a burrito bar. And my job would consist of getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, going into the burrito bar, cleaning everything. I wasn't even high enough up the pecking order to be allowed to touch the food. So I told my brother-in-law, I said, listen, he wasn't even paying me. So I said, listen, I can do this, but I need time between 11 and 1 to do cold calls on my business, right, on the voiceover marketplace. And doing the cold calls was marginally better than working in the stupid burrito bar, cleaning up and doing all that work and getting up and getting out leaflets and all that stuff. So that made me do the cold calls. And that is what, you know, created enough success for us to actually create an income and get going. So I realized that, you know, I'm going to give myself the credit of putting myself in that shitty situation of working in a burrito bar. And that was worse than, you know, having to do the work that I didn't want to do, which was doing the cold calls. And that's what made some action. And, you know, later on, yeah, you know, not so long ago, a much more grown-up version of that was, shit, I'm 38. I have no real business anymore. And I've got two kids, you know. And it's interesting. I find this group quite interesting because I feel like people get serious when they have kids. I feel like there's a couple of people around who are half-assing it, and then when the kids come along, that provides amazing like motivation. I think that's definitely true for me, and I think a couple of other people around here like are like that too.
Hello everyone, my name is Matthew Paulson. I am the founder of MarketBeat.com, which is a financial media company. We send out a daily investment newsletter to about 450,000 people. And you can think about it as the Wall Street Journal, but it's personalized based on the stocks that you own. So I want to share with you guys five really points of failure in my business. It's very easy to talk about wins, but it's harder to talk about stuff that has just went horribly and, you know, and ruined your day, your week, or your month. So that is what I'm going to do over the next couple of minutes. The first thing that I really screwed up in my business was failing to read some paperwork I signed with my previous employer. There was a non-compete agreement that I didn't read too closely, and I had a business that was a little bit too competitive with what they did, and they didn't like it. So they brought that paper back in front of me. I kind of ignored it. They didn't have a very good lawyer and sent a bunch of stupid letters, and we kind of ignored them. So they filed a lawsuit against us, and it cost us $15,000 to settle that. So that was mistake number one. So always, you know, pay attention to paperwork you're signing, especially with employers. Number two is that we half-assed blog content for a long period of time. When I ran a network of personal finance blogs, content was written by people that were pretty average writers. They were about 400 words in length, and it was just a lot of the same types of stuff that you'd find everywhere else. Of course, the Google Panda update was an algorithm change to Google search algorithm that targeted content specifically like this, content that wasn't very unique or long, and we got hit really hard in the search rankings by doing this. So we had probably about half of our traffic disappear overnight. First Panda update, which was February 23rd of 2011, so you know, that business just wasn't sustainable because we didn't do a good job with content. Number three, it's really kind of the same thing. It's relying too much on Google traffic. Our first business, you know, the network personal finance blogs, was really all dependent on Google traffic. So that was just a very big single point of failure. So in our current business now, what we do is we rely on many different things, not just Google traffic. You know, we get traffic from Bing, we get traffic from StockTwits, from Twitter, we get email signups through our affiliate network, through co-registration ads, Facebook ads, Google AdWords, our mobile app, and just lots of different ways. So we really want to be reliant on one big company as little as possible. So, I mean, you see this now with people like on Amazon, where Amazon just changed their review policy. So the strategy that everyone was using to get all of their products ranked on Amazon doesn't work anymore. And you just see this over and over again with big companies changing the rules, you know, not in favor of the publishers and the people that use their platform. So I really try to avoid being too reliant on one. Number four is actually publishing books. I've published 8 books, and I've literally made no money off them after expenses. So I make probably, I put a heck of a lot of work in 2015 and 2016 to put books out. I thought I was going to be the next Steve Scott and make $30,000 a month getting book royalties on Amazon. It didn't work out that way. It cost me about $5,000 to put out each of those books, and I spent probably $40,000, you know, putting books together and marketing them, promoting them, and I've probably made about $40,000 in revenue. So it was, from a revenue perspective, kind of a complete and total waste of time and energy. So only really write a book if you want to use it as a brand building technique. And yes, there's been some benefits from that, but from a financial perspective, it has been not a good use of time. Finally, the last mistake was holding on to my day job for a way too long period of time. I made enough money where I could have quit my day job probably 2 years before I actually did. And I was just so afraid that my business was going to disappear overnight that I gave my best 40 hours a week to an employer for literally 2 years that I could have spent growing my business. So if you are, you know, making at least kind of what you make from your day job, you should really think about making that jump sooner rather than later. Because once you put your best energy into your business, things tend to blow up. After I quit my day job, the revenue in my business doubled in the next 12 months, and then it doubled again in the 12 months after that. So like once I was freed up to really focus on the business, I was able to do all the projects I hadn't had time to do. So I really wish I had quit my day job earlier.
Hi, I'm Chad Deshawn from BoardGameTables.com. I sell board game tables to people who play, guess what, board games. Here are my five tips. Tip number one, there's less in between than you think. A lot of times you hear about other people's businesses, hear how far along other people are, and it seems like they're farther along than they actually are. And when you look at your own stuff, in hindsight, things tend to seem easier or more obvious than they were, so you don't feel like you're as far along as you actually are. And the truth is the gap between those two places is not nearly as big as you think. It'll take work to get there, but it's probably not as big of a gap as you think it is. Tip number two, when you don't know what to do, it's easy to do nothing. Just do something instead. Most of us hear a lot of advice. We have giant to-do lists. We have a million things we want to do that could make our businesses run better. It can be overwhelming, so you don't know what to work on. You work on something, you think, oh no, this is the most important thing. Then you work on something else and you end up getting nothing done. It can be overwhelming. Just do something. Stick with it. Get something done. Doing something is obviously better than doing nothing. Tip number three, don't fear the one-time sale. LTV is LTV. It's lifetime value. If I feel like a lot of people are really pushing for recurring revenue models in places where it doesn't fit. I think it's a lot more important to match your billing model to the value the customer is receiving. Whether that's monthly billing, one-time sale, metered billing, think about the value you're providing and align how you're charging with that. If you're charging $50 a month and your customers are only staying 6 months, that's $300 LTV. If you charge $300 all up front, that's still $300 LTV. $300, $300, it's all the same. Number four, I can't do X until I do Y. A lot of times I tend to have the habit of making projects bigger than they actually need to be. When I was getting ready to put my product, my Kickstarter for a new budget table, I thought I could not do that until I figured out how I was going to redesign the website to market these two products independently. Eventually, I just couldn't figure it out, so I just put the Kickstarter up anyway. I had like one link to it on the website. It was not a cohesive market strategy comparing A to B, and it was fine. You don't need to do everything that you think you need to do. Similarly, when I started my B2B SaaS, I started to create this customer dashboard and log in and allow you to change your billing and your password and update your credit card. And while I was still working on that, I had people emailing me asking to sign up. And so eventually I just, for my first 10 customers, I literally hard coded an array at the top of my script that had their customer data in it because I didn't have the other stuff ready. And it turned out I never got around to building that customer dashboard because it really wasn't that important. Don't put arbitrary preconditions on the important work you need to do. And number five, walk slow and take it all in. I was at a great baseball game last night. I got to see a rookie pitcher pitch for my Kansas City Royals, Eric Sogland, and he had a fantastic night. Went 6 1/3 innings and did not give up a single run, which if you don't know anything about baseball, that's pretty much your goal if you're the pitcher. You don't want to give up runs. And the manager came to take him out of the game. He was going to walk back to the dugout. There's about 20,000 people there. They're going to cheer him off the field. The manager told him, walk slow and take it all in. It's the same thing in business. We all have goals and places we want to get to, but even before we're there, you know, this pitcher, this is the very first game of his career, but in a way, it's also the goal. He made it. He's been working for 20 years to make it this far, and he's got a lot of work ahead of him, but take in the beginning, take in the highlights, take in where you're at right now. You can keep working for the goal, but enjoy Enjoy the moment. Enjoy where you're at. That's my five tips.
So my name is Derek Reimer, and I'm the co-founder of Drip, a email marketing automation platform. And today I have five tips to share about some technical decisions that we made that were instrumental to Drip's success. So the first one is choosing boring technologies. This one was pretty important. I remember around the time when we started Drip, there were, as there usually are, there were a handful of technologies that were kind of catching fire among developers. I think MongoDB was becoming popular as a database to choose. And as it turned out, about a year later, a bunch of startups had chosen MongoDB as their database platform and found they were losing data, and it was just not as stable as some of the tried and true technologies out there. So I think something that's really important when you're just starting out is to try to reduce as much risk as possible from the technologies that you choose, because you're going to have enough risk, building your product and trying to find product market fit. You don't also want to be worrying about your technology potentially failing you. So that's tip number one. Tip number two is to avoid premature optimization. We could not have imagined the types of scaling challenges we have encountered through the 5+ years of running Drip. And if we had attempted to engineer the product to sustain the scaling challenges that we are today, we would have most likely made the wrong decisions. And so I think something important to keep in mind is that you're not going to be able to anticipate what scaling challenges you're going to have. And we try to not look down the road more than 3 to 6 months and just plan that we're going to have to revisit our scaling plan and figure out our architecture, every couple of months. Third tip is to try to have comprehensive automated test coverage from day one. And you'll find that this is probably an additional, 20% time investment. And so a lot of companies will tend to opt not to have full test coverage from day one. But I think it was really important, especially as the product gained complexity and we figured out different directions we needed to take it. Drip started out as a very simple platform and ultimately blossomed into a full automation platform. And without a solid foundation of test coverage behind the scenes, we wouldn't have been able to move as fast as we did and to build such a complex system. Tip number four is to be extremely picky with the code that's entering your code base. It's kind of like the broken Windows syndrome, where if you have an area of the code base that's not well tested or poorly architected, it tends to attract more bad code. So we've always been really diligent about kind of having gatekeepers over different parts of the code base, like, our JavaScript code base, our CSS even, and paying extra attention to the quality of the code entering the code base goes a long way in making sure that that you don't have a bunch of bad code slipping in. And finally, tip number five is learning to say no. We receive probably 150 feature requests a month right now at Drip. And I would say 90% of them we just have to say no to, because they either don't generalize very well to our customer base, or they're just, it would be way too much work to try to accomplish everything that everyone's asking for. So, definitely learning to say no is an important skill to polish.
Okay, so my name is Ed McArdle. My company is Agentivity. We are a SaaS tool for travel agencies. So we had a partnership with a big technology company who works in our space for about 3 years. And the short story there is that it did not work out for us. And that's something that I reflected a lot about. So if I was to talk to a younger version of myself, knowing what I know now, I'd advise him not to go into that partnership. However, I realize that's not very helpful advice. So I'd rather suggest when considering such a partnership is to write down and think through a type of risk analysis to ask. And what I mean by that is really to ask yourself what could go wrong with the partnership and how you would deal with that problem. So some questions you could ask yourself when considering this would be, like, how would you fare without the partnership? What would happen if a key stakeholder from the partner company leaves his or her position? Because that's something that did happen to us. If they terminated the relationship, how detrimental would that be to you? And then on the other side of that, if you terminated the relationship, what could the potential fallout be? And then probably some warnings that I'd like to pass on were, firstly, that you dilute your brand value by being associated with a larger company. And secondly, that being in a partnership requires that you put your time and focus into that partnership. And that means that you'll inevitably neglect other parts of your business. We ended up having to reinvest time and effort into things that we should have been doing a long time ago, particularly things around sales efforts and different marketing things that we'd really neglected because that we were being in the partnership. I've got a few other things that I probably learned over time that I put into practice now that I didn't do when I started. Okay, so the first one would be, so to help figure out a problem, start by focusing on what you don't want to do. And I find that that makes it more obvious about what you do want to do or what decision you need to make by the simple process of elimination. And it just tends to narrow down what options you have. And that's something I've been doing a lot over the last year and found it incredibly helpful. My second thing is that I tend to be very critical of myself and the company. And it really is something that it's just very easy for me to focus on what we're not doing well and ignore all of the things that we are doing, that we're all doing right. So what I've found here that's helpful is to write down what those problems are, but I've added the constraint that for every negative, I have to add a positive. And of course, by doing that, I've actually found that there's lots more strengths and things that we've done right than I, you know, had been giving ourselves credit for. So my third lesson I've learned is that you can't do everything yourself. So you'll need to hire staff to take over parts of your business, which I appreciate is fairly obvious. But one of the things I've learned is to take our time when we're hiring, because it's quite a trap to fall down when you're desperate for help. It's really tempting to hire quickly, but you have to be disciplined and resist that temptation and wait for the right person. And then, because really what we found is that hiring the wrong person can really take you backwards. So I actually looked this quote up for you, Craig, because I actually remembered it differently. But there's a famous quote from the author Lewis Carroll. And the quote is, if you don't know where you're going, then any road will take you there. And what I mean by this is that to figure out where you want to go, you've got to make a plan about how to get there. And that is something that I've really been doing a lot more of over the past couple of years. And it's made a big difference. So I really would like to hit my previous self over the head a bit and tell him to do more planning. And I think overall, I'm much more focused now on that we're going in the right direction, and I'm much less worried about the time it takes us. I'm not saying that, you know, I want us to take forever to get there, but I'd rather get us going in the right direction and have a more of a strategic view and go in that and follow that path.
Hi, my name is John Turner, and I run SeedProd, which is a WordPress plugin business, and we create coming soon pages for WordPress. And here are my five lessons learned over the course of my entrepreneur career. All right, so number one would be don't fret over the minutia. And I'm originally a developer, so I would agonize over decisions like which mail service provider to use and things of that nature. You just want to pick something and go with it and don't fret over the small stuff. My number two is that for developers, marketing is hard. And I encourage you to read and learn from others as much as you can about marketing and really hone your skills on that. And if you're a good enough developer to build what you want, then stop worrying about development and focus on marketing. My third lesson learned is customer service is marketing. I have gotten the majority or at least over half of my clients from referral and word of mouth, and that was primarily due to great customer service. Number four is learn from others. You're not the first person to go through this. There's been many other people to be in your shoes. I encourage you to listen to podcasts like Rogue Startups and learn from what others are doing and from their mistakes. And number five is never stop trying and always keep pushing. It took me 10 years to become what I consider successful. And I encourage you to keep on keeping on. And that's it.
So I'm Moitza. I have a boutique social media agency specializing in Facebook ads, actually. And I help business owners increase profits with Facebook ads by generating leads Just making conversions faster. One of the biggest failures that I have learned from is not accepting prepayments. Yeah, I think I had my first negative experience. I think it was like 1 month after building my own business, after establishing my brand and, you know, just, you know, putting my website out there, and I started contacting clients and so on. And that was the first negative experience that I had. It happened in 1 month. And I got contacted by a small business from our country, so a local client. And previously, I didn't do prepayments, so I did 1 month of work. And after that 1 month, I sent them an invoice and they would pay it. That was my beginning strategy, but it didn't work. Because 1 month later, so I sent them an invoice and I didn't get the payment, and I had to actually kind of threaten them with my lawyer. So they sent me the money and we never worked again. And that was kind of the point where I decided that from now on, I'm going to accept prepayments. So I'm going to work, my whole business is going to be like, you know, you give me I send you an invoice before we start working together, you pay for that invoice, and that's when we can start actually working together. And it worked. It was just a simple switch and no one said anything. I didn't even get whenever I said I accept only prepayments, I never get an email saying, but I don't do prepayments, I wanted to do the work first. So it was a simple switch, a simple solution, but it was probably one of the biggest failures that I've had at the beginning, and definitely learned from it a ton. Building genuine relationships really helps with putting your business on the right path. I didn't know that previously. What I was always focusing on was the next sale. So whenever I talked to someone, whenever I got a new lead, I wasn't trying to build the relationship. I was trying to get that next sale. And when I switched my thinking around a little bit, when I started thinking differently, and when I started building genuine relationships, really helping people and not focusing so much on the hard pitch, on the sale, that's when things started to change for me. Now I have a big network of people, of prospects, of clients that I communicate very often. We hop on calls, we email back and forth. They always keep me in mind. Whenever something comes up and they need my help, they will contact me. And that really helped to move my business forward.
Hey, this is Phil Dirksen of WP Simple Pay, and I just wanted to give my 5 tips that I kind of learned along the way that helped me be a better product founder. So, say the first one is to focus on a single base of customers. And as they say, it's easier to sell to existing customers than acquire new ones. And I learned this the hard way. So, if you have multiple products, they can target the same customers. That's fine. But if you have two completely separate products like I've had, the switching context is just too tough. I've had two completely separate plugins with almost no customer crossover. So unless you have like a larger team where each person can focus on one product long term, including yourself, the founder, then this is definitely tough. I would avoid it if you can. Second tip, be protective of your productive time. So you've probably heard this before, but if you can, everybody has kind of that window of the day where they're just, I don't know, 5 times to 10 times more productive than other times. So you need to protect that as much as possible. So for some people, that's, you know, early morning, late at night. For me, it's kind of like kind of after the kids have gone off to school. So not real early in the morning, but I just try to block that out until lunchtime. So about 3 hours, turn off, you know, email, phone, social media stuff, all that kind of stuff. And just work on your toughest tasks at that point. If you're working at home, make sure you're not interrupted, that sort of thing. So then you can, if you can, schedule, you know, more easier mundane tasks and calls and stuff, you know, at different times during the day. Another tip is to that I kind of been trying to get better and better at, and it's paid off, is staying in better touch with your customers and potential customers. I have, you know, great folks on my team that help with support and even some pre-sales, but I don't think it's a good idea as the founder to completely, at least on a smaller team, completely get away from that. You know, you can hire a lot of that, but I wouldn't hire it all the way, and or at least, you know, dip in once in a while and talk to them and find out the details of their problems, how they use your products, you know, their goals, all that kind of stuff. If you lose touch, then it's really kind of hard to guide your product the right way. So tip four, make sure you get face-to-face time or at least voice time with your peers and mentors. So basically Skype calls, masterminds, and of course conferences. I just got back from MicroConf, like a lot of like Dave here and other people recently here, and it's just, I don't know, it's hard to put a number value on that, but the insights gained from those real conversations and just kind of aha moments, it's just invaluable. And so if you're not in a regular mastermind, of course you've heard that before, but it really helps. And if you're not, just kind of reach out to people and try to schedule calls once in a while. You know, even stuff like partnerships and deals can come out of these, just game changing types of things for your business. And then last tip is just to keep healthy and active. So outside of your business, outside of learning new things physically, it's just, you know, your mind and body are so tied together that I can tell a difference quite a bit with productivity as well. Just eating healthier as much as possible, getting enough sleep, exercising, and then, you know, hobbies are great, but if you can make some of your hobbies active hobbies, then that you kind of hit, you know, tackle two things at once. So for me, it's, you know, like this last winter, I got a little more snow skiing in, and then I've gotten into a regular tennis league here. And of course, as my kids are getting older, they're a little more challenging to play in different sports that they're in. So.
And that's our episode for this week. If you have any questions or comments, please let us know at podcast@roguestartups.com. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Rogue Startups. And be sure to visit roguestartups.com for full show notes on each episode. If you're enjoying the show, we'd sure appreciate a review in iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.